Election College, episode 224, Harriet Lane.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Hey, Ben. So after the last couple of episodes, it was a question of whether or not we would be able to recover from all the darkness. But Harriet Lane came, and people are probably thinking right now, not our audience, our typical audience, because let's face it, they already know who Harriet Lane is. But there was no President Lane. There was President Buchanan, who kind of was a dark presidency, or he had a dark presidency. You can't be a dark presidency. But she was kind of a bright spot.
Yeah, I mean, after this deep depression that has taken over our podcast for the last couple episodes, I'm happy to get into one that's a little less dramatic in a sense. And Harriet Lane is the one to do it for us. And yeah, you mentioned that she didn't have the same last name as President Buchanan, which of course is just because she kept her maiden name, right? Not, you know, she definitely had to be his wife.
Or niece.
Oh, okay. Close enough.
Which is as close to a wife as James Buchanan is going to have. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
So Harriet Lane, she was from Franklin County, Pennsylvania, and she was the youngest child of Elliot Toll Lane, who was a merchant, and Jane Ann Buchanan, who, guess what, was James Buchanan's sister.
Imagine that. And there was somebody I met recently who claimed that they were related somehow to James Buchanan. And I was trying to figure out how it would even be possible, but I didn't bother. Anyway, her mom died when she was only 9 years old. Well, whenever Harriet was 9 years old. And so she is an orphan at that point. And she asks if she can have her favorite uncle, James, to be her father, her legal guardian, her adopted dad, basically. And so he's a senator at this point. He's a Democrat. And he is, of course, from Pennsylvania as well. And he's like, you know what, Harriet, you and your sister, why don't you go ahead and I'll take care of you. I'm going to go ahead and enroll you in some boarding schools in Virginia, which, you know, boarding school wouldn't have been like a punishment kind of thing, as sometimes we think of it or the movies portray it now, but sent them down there for some good education. And, you know, after a little while, he becomes Secretary of State and she starts getting into politics.
So Ben, it's kind of weird because we're not going to talk anything about Harriet's sister, except this part where it's like, oh, she had a sister, but I don't know, maybe she just didn't take as much of a liking to her uncle. We could probably start a rumor.
Or maybe he didn't take a liking to her.
Yeah, he could probably just say, you stay in America. I'm taking Harriet.
Yeah.
You're coming with me. Because as ambassador to the court of St. James's, Harriet goes along with her uncle. And Queen Victoria is quite taken with Harriet Lane. Actually, the entire royal family is. And a bunch of British dudes are pretty taken with her too. But James is like, well, I guess we'll get into that a little bit later. But what you need to know is she was quite attractive and charismatic, and she brought a lot of the European sophistication to the White House when she took on that role.
Yeah, and she takes on that role in 1857. And she, you know, she acts as the hostess during that time while Buchanan is president. And it's even a little bit of a kind of a trendsetter or a fashionista, where she was able to, you know, just the clothing she wore, like Jason mentioned, because of her time in London, people were always interested in how she dressed and how she acted and how she did her hair. And so a lot of women would copy her, both women she knew and women she didn't. And at one point, it was not quite scandalous, but way out of the ordinary. She takes her neckline down on the inaugural gown by 2.5 inches. So, Jason, you can imagine what kind of a scandal that would have been.
Yes. Well, just like any other person who would have a scandal, they would have popular music written about her. And there was a song, not really, Ben.
Yeah.
I just had to make that. I said it confidently.
It was a good segue that didn't mean anything.
It didn't. But there was a popular song dedicated to her. It was called Listen to the Mockingbird. And she was really the first lady of this modern era. And I guess I have to say first lady in quotes, even though she was the first person to be called first lady. Kind of interesting. But she used her position in this role to promote causes like improving the conditions of Native Americans who lived on reservations. And she also invited artists and musicians to the different functions that would take place in the White House. And because of this, she is indeed called the first of the modern first ladies.
Yeah, so there's a presidential yacht that gets named for her. There's a lot of military ships, which we might talk about a little bit later, that get named for her as well, just to kind of honor her legacy and some of the interesting things she did. So it's interesting because, you know, there's we've always seen a difference in the major parties in politics, but this is right as states are seceding and right as things are pretty tense in political land. And so she really has to manage a lot of that stuff when she has formal dinner parties to make sure that the parties are not sitting too close to each other, to make sure dignitaries get, precedence over the other ones, but that political foes aren't sitting next to each other and fighting over who passes the butter to who. She's kind of in a bad spot from the beginning, because no matter how hard she tries, we're still going to hit a civil war, right? Like, obviously, it's not her responsibility to keep us out of a civil war, but there are so many other outside forces that she just has to do the best she can. And I'm sure many times she was frustrated by the fact that it didn't matter how hard she tried, the path was still going downhill.
Yeah. What a difficult role. But then you have her being probably more popular than Buchanan. I guess we'll talk about that a little bit when it comes to her legacy, because that's pretty fascinating. I just can't hold myself back. I need to. Buchanan, he does not run for re-election, and he goes back to Wheatland in Lancaster and begins his time as an ex-president. And she comes to live with her uncle, but back to some personal life. We mentioned that she had quite the number of suitors while in England.
Yeah, so Sir Fitzroy Kelly, he was actually the Attorney General to the Prime Minister at the time, proposes to her. And Queen Victoria, which of all people, how would you like Queen Victoria to have a weigh in on your proposal? Is like, yeah, do it. Let's go. Harriet, we want to keep you here in England because you're like really cool and you do cool stuff. And so Harriet's like, yeah, sure. I mean, I might consider it. And there's a lot of guys who like me, not a big deal or anything. And Buchanan's like, please don't do it. Like, I know you're excited and you're young and you want to rush into this, but there's lots of people that are less trouble than these folks. And so eventually she says no and everything, and ends up marrying a guy from Baltimore who's a banker. His name is Henry Elliot Johnson. And she's about 36 when she gets married to him.
Yeah, and they have two boys, but tragically, they die. Her husband dies, and James Buchanan die all within an 18-year period. And this sounds really depressing. But Harriet she's got a life. She lives until like 1903. So yeah, so she lives, you know, to be a decent age for that time period. But she wrote in her will in 1895 that there should be a school building constructed on the grounds where the National Cathedral is. And she asked that it be called the Lane Johnston Building, that her legacy and her husband's legacy, as well as the memory of her sons, would continue. And that actually has been done until this day.
Yeah, so she really did have quite an impact. And she's actually buried in Baltimore, Maryland. And they marked her grave with a Celtic cross because of the Peace Cross on the cathedral, the Washington National Cathedral, that is. And, you know, a bunch of different individuals were brought in to see the building of the Lane Johnston Building at the school, and really made an impact on those individuals as well. She dedicated $400,000, and keep in mind that's a little over $10 million now, to make sure that there was a home for invalid children. It was actually called the Harriet Lane Home for Invalid Children. Of course, you know, that probably wouldn't be an appropriate name now to call something. It would be a little less than PC, but that is what it was called. And she had this kind of passion for building children's homes or children's hospitals because of both of her sons who had died during childhood at John Hopkins Hospital.
So even to this day, thousands of children are benefiting from Harriet Lane's efforts to establish this hospital and clinics that even bear her name to this day. There's even the Harriet Lane Handbook, which is a manual for pediatric house officers that is still used. She's also known for having an extensive art collection, and these works of European art were left to the U.S. government, and the Smithsonian calls her the First Lady of the National Collection of Fine Arts. So that collection, you can head over to D.C. and see many of the works there.
So the Coast Guard has three different cutters named after her, and a cutter is a ship, and they named them, you know, just for various things that she had done, and for just kind of remembering her and the good things that she did while she was alive. There's one that's still in usage. It's the USCGC Harriet Lane, and they commissioned it in 1984, and it's still active as of today.
Yeah. So the legacy of James Buchanan, I mean, let's just face it, a lot of people blame the Civil War on him. You can imagine how awkward that was for him going back to Wheatland, Pennsylvania, and the Civil War breaks out and you're hanging out there for the rest of your days, knowing that some of your efforts probably, or at least you're being accused of some of your efforts or lack thereof of causing this Civil War, wasn't the most popular guy. So in her later years, Harriet was known as the Grand Dame of Washington society, and she did travel back in 1902, shortly before she died. She went back to England for the coronation of King Edward the VII. He's the same King Edward who had visited her in the White House when he was a lot younger. And with all of this wealth that she had amassed later in life, she wanted there to be a tribute to her uncle there in Washington, D.C. This is pretty controversial, as you can imagine, with the reputation that Buchanan had of possibly starting the Civil War. Massachusetts Senator Henry Cabot Lodge compared Buchanan to Benedict Arnold, saying that a statue would honor a president, quote, upon whom rests the shadow of disloyalty in the great office to which he was elected. However, during the Woodrow Wilson administration, they signed a bill into law saying that the statue would be dedicated, and it is still there today in Meridian Hill Park, there is a statue to President Buchanan, all because of his niece being a rock star.
Yeah, so, wow. So a really cool legacy for Harriet, a really weird, controversial, negative mostly legacy for Buchanan. And, you know, more than anything, we want to make sure that Election College has a good legacy. And you could help us with that by leaving us a great review over on iTunes. Sorry for the cheesy segue there, but it really does mean a lot to us when you go to iTunes and leave us a review, because it helps other people see what's going on. It helps other people get interested in the show. It raises us up on the charts, which we're always in our category in the top 100, which is pretty stinking cool. So we would really appreciate it if you helped us stay there, or, you know, maybe rise up to the top 50 sometimes.
Yeah, and what really gets our hearts beating quick and fast and makes us feel all ooey-gooey all over is when you interact with us on social media. You can do that by visiting one of our social properties on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Election College.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Talk to you next time.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.